This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Sincere is live in studio, and he is online at ricksincere.com. He is a blogger of note, and you know, I feel bad saying blogger because you do so much more. I mean, you truly are a one-man reporting team.
Well, I try to be. I've been neglecting my blog since about April when I started writing for Examiner.com, which is a nationwide website affiliated with the Examiner newspapers. And most of what I've been writing has been on there. And basically, I've just been carrying around a voice recorder. And whenever I meet somebody who's interesting enough to interview, I interview them for 3 minutes. That gives me enough material for a 400 to 500 word article.
Yeah.
So I've interviewed Governor McDonnell on his ABC privatization plan. I've been talking to various political figures. As a matter of fact, I interviewed you after the issues forum at the senior center.
Oh, but I didn't break your camera. I remember that. I remember that well. Well, I've seen you at all these events. I mean, the event we had during the book festival, you're
right
there, and you're there with your camera and your recorder, and it really is impressive. You're not just blogging. I mean, you really are doing some serious reporting on stuff that is going on around town that sometimes isn't even covered by the local media.
Yeah, I try to do my best to sort of create an archive of events that otherwise aren't being recorded. And a good example would be that conversation you had with Rick Brookhiser and Rick Hertzberg at the book festival. As far as I know, there was nobody else there with a camera.
And
I put the whole thing up on YouTube.
And I really enjoyed that. I mean, that was great. There's two of the smartest guys in America, and they couldn't be coming at politics from a more different a place. You know, one's from the left, one's from the right, and yet they got along great, and they really showed that it's possible to disagree about this stuff and still get along and still enjoy each other's company and not call each other names and not demonize each other. And actually, what they demonstrated was the ability to find common ground on some of these things.
They really did, and the real benefit for me being there was I bought a copy of Richard Brookhiser's memoir. I think it's called Right Time, Right Place.
Yeah.
Took it home with me, started reading it at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it didn't put it down until 7 o'clock the next morning.
Yeah.
Read it straight through, cover to cover. It was just fascinating.
It's about his memories of William Buckley, right?
Right.
And working with Buckley.
His work on National Review. He had his first article published in National Review when he was 14 years old. And after he was finished with college, he got hired as a top editor there, and he's basically been with National Review since then.
Yeah. Well, I had the audio of that, actually, and we'll have to play that on this program again. It's been a long time, but it is a fascinating conversation, and that was from the book festival this past spring. We're live in studio here on WINA. It's 38 minutes after 4 o'clock, 22 before 5, and we're talking with Rick Sincere, and he's online at ricksincere.com, and that has links to the Examiner articles as well, right?
Yes, it does. I try to put the links up there so that if people are looking for me and what I'm writing about, they can find it in more than one place.
So, Rick, let me ask you. You're a former Libertarian candidate for the General Assembly, support the Republican Liberty Caucus here in Virginia, the former state party chairman of the Libertarian Party. We have primaries going on around America today, Florida and Arizona, Alaska, the ones of real note that people are really following. One of the things everybody's looking at is to see the viability of Tea Party conservatives as they stand against more mainstream party Republican nominees. What are your thoughts on this as we watch these votes coming in around the country today?
Well, I think you're going to see a mix, and as a matter of fact, we've seen a mix as the primaries have evolved over the past few months. People talk about a year like this being one of anti-incumbent fervor, but this year it's not so much anti-incumbent as anti-establishment. And you're seeing candidates like Sharon Angle in Nevada getting the nomination for the U.S. Senate race against a really strong establishment candidate who is the former chairman of the state Republican Party, Sue Loudon. I think Loudon would have been a terrific candidate, but she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. In any other year, she would have been nominated by her party and would have gone on to beat Harry Reid. Sharon Angle is a bit quirky. Among other things, she said she indicated she's got support. She supports alcohol prohibition, which is very odd for somebody from Nevada.
Yeah,
and I don't know how that's going to
very
play
odd for
out.
Somebody in 2010 as well.
Yeah, it really is, and I think it's going to be a situation where the Republicans may have nominated the only candidate they could have in Nevada who can't beat Harry Reid in the fall. And at the same time, Harry Reid's son is running for governor of Nevada, and he's not even using his last name in his ads. He's just using his first name because he doesn't want to be associated with his father, who's the majority leader of the U.S. Senate. This is really a year in which incumbents and establishment characters are feeling the heat from the voters.
Yeah.
And the Tea Party is a big part of that.
Phone lines are open, 977-1070. Bring the listeners in on this conversation at any time. Pick up your phone, 977-1070. Looks like McCain will win the nomination despite an early threat. He looks like he's going to be okay now, but what he had to do was throw away any semblance of this maverick idea that McCain was a maverick, which I never really bought in the first place. But he certainly has run very far to the right to win this nomination.
Yeah, he has. I suspect that after he wins the nomination, he'll go back to some of his former positions. His challenger, J.D. Hayworth, is a former member of Congress who was part of the class of 94. He kept his term limits pledge and only served three terms and went back to Arizona, where he became a radio talk show host. And apparently he's sort of in the Glenn Beck, Lou Dobbs mold. He, again, is kind of quirky. And I think early in the campaign, there was a thought that Hayworth could defeat McCain because McCain, again, was part of the establishment and been around for a long time. He's been in Congress for 28 years. But I think Hayworth had some missteps during the campaign, and people just thought he can't handle the job.
Yeah. And, of course, you've got McCain's $20 million to the other guys, what, 2 or 3 million,
right?
I think,
I mean, he's a national political figure and has been for many years, so he has a lot. He's got a big Rolodex, let's put it that way.
Yeah, but I agree with you. John McCain's not going to take these extreme right-wing views that he's going to use to win a primary. He's not going to take those back to Washington.
No, I don't think so.
We're talking with Rick Sincere, and the phone lines are open. Eric's with us in Charlottesville. Hey, Eric, how's it going, man?
Hey, it's going great. Listen, I'd like to switch gears a little bit. You mentioned ABC privatization a little earlier, and I'd like to ask Rick, do you think we've reached a tipping point with this? I mean, it was first mentioned by the Wilder Commission as something that the state should privatize way back under Mark Warner. Tim Kaine gave lip service to privatizing it. And now Bob McDonnell actually was part of his platform when he ran. And I've seen articles in the Washington Post supporting it, of all places. So do you think this is actually going to happen? Or, I mean, if you had to guess, what are the odds of us actually privatizing these ABC stores? Because it would be nice to sort of remove that off the plate of government, because it certainly isn't, in my opinion, a legitimate function of government.
So, Eric, you support it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll say I support it, too. This is something I actually ran on when I was a candidate for the General Assembly way back in 1991. At that time, it wasn't much on people's radar. And as I said, I've interviewed Governor McDonnell on this issue. I've interviewed members of the General Assembly. And what's really interesting is I get sort of these private comments that, you know, I really support this, but I don't think my colleagues do. But they're all saying that. And the other thing is that
they need to have a meeting, right?
Yeah, I think they do. The other problem is that the specifics have not been laid out yet, at least not publicly. And there are at least four different forms of the plan that are available, all of which have their pros and cons. You know, if it were me as a libertarian, I would just say this should be private. You know, there's nothing else that the government sells as a monopoly. And that it's not a core function of government. Even, you know, our own delegate David Toscano says it's not a core function of government. But then he went on to say, but they, you know, the government makes $200 million on this every year. And, you know, I'd like to ask him, you know, should the government, in order to make $200 million from some other lucrative trade, take over something else? You know, there's no principle involved in supporting the government-owned monopoly on liquor sales. There's just the desire for more money for government. And I think that we should go on principle and sell the ABC stores and go with what other 32 states have done. And this is part of the private sector. It shouldn't be part of the government sector.
Eric, you agree? It's a bit of a historic anachronism, is it not?
Well, it's a bizarre legacy of prohibition. I mean, it's really sort of, almost 19th century, certainly 20th century early, but it's, as Rick said, 32 other states seem to have done it, and society seems to be working quite nicely in those places. So it'd be great if we could just get that one thing done. And I've seen some impressive studies indicating that we could maintain a perfectly good revenue stream if we didn't have to support all those buildings and all those pensions, and that it wouldn't be a net loss necessarily, depending on how they implement it. But regardless, as Rick said, the principle of the thing is this is not an essential or proper function of government to be selling Jack Daniels. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, Eric,
Kroger should be doing that, not the ABC stores.
Eric, stay with us, because that was my next question, and either one of you can answer this. If we make $200 million, is that gross or net? Because the first thing I think of is what Eric mentioned, the electricity on all those buildings, the staff on all those buildings, the pensions for all that staff. Is this gross or net profit?
That's net profit. And the other thing that some of the opponents are concerned about are what you call the social outcomes of alcohol sales, which include drunk driving, underage drinking, excessive drinking. And there have been several studies done, most recently one by the Virginia Institute for Public Policy, but I'm also familiar with one from a think tank in Pennsylvania that shows that the social outcomes in the control states like Virginia and the free market states like, say, Wisconsin or West Virginia, which recently privatized, are virtually the same. In fact, I talked to an economist from Duquesne University who told me that the only real difference in these states is that in the control states like Virginia, drunk driving is slightly higher.
As it is right now with ABC stores.
Right.
Yeah. So, and that's a way of saying that if you do privatize this and we see liquor in grocery stores, for example, mm-hmm. which is an option I guess we could see, we're not going to see this huge spike of drunk driving and teen drinking. And
well, the thing we have to remember is,
I mean, is that what the studies say? Is that
right,
what you're saying?
Yeah, that's essentially what they say. And we have to remember that we're not eliminating the ABC. The ABC will still exist as a regulatory agency. There will still be laws that say you can't sell liquor between certain hours. There will be laws that say you can't sell
it
liquor to
retail.
People who are drunk.
Yeah,
it just means that we'll be buying it at Walmart or Costco rather than a Soviet-style ABC store.
Well, I certainly hope that the governor continues to stand strong on this issue. I know that it was a strange position to take given his association with the religious right. I thought it was a pretty brave stand, given the fact that a lot of more socially conservative members of the House of Delegates are opposed to it for the very social reasons you said, but Governor McDonnell was pretty clear and wasn't afraid to talk about it. So I hope that he continues to use some of that political capital that he has to actually get it done. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is we're going to see a coalition of bootleggers and Baptists against this. When I went to the governor's town hall meeting in Roanoke a few weeks ago, one of the only people who stood up to oppose it was a beer wholesaler.
Because it's not surprising.
They feel that this is going to cut into their profits.
Interesting. Eric, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. There's Eric, and we got a line open at 977-1070, and Margo is on the line in Crozet. Margo, you're on with Rick Sincere. Go right ahead.
Yes, two things. Well, I'd like to add to your previous conversation, and that is I would hope that grocery stores and Walmart won't be selling hard liquor because of children around. I hope that hard liquor will be sold out of liquor stores with an age limit,
Well, I don't think that's really a problem, Margo. I've lived in places like Nevada and Wisconsin. In Nevada, you can sell liquor in grocery stores 24 hours a day, but they segregate the departments where the alcoholic beverages are sold so that, kids can't get in there without, their parents' permission. It's not a matter of, not being exposed to it. It's just that the regulations deal with this very effectively.
Okay, and then will all of the checkout people be responsible for checking IDs then?
Absolutely, the same way they are now with beer and wine. There's no difference.
Yeah, I mean, we got beer and wine in grocery stores now. I don't really see the big difference if you add liquor in there.
The biggest difference for Virginia consumers is that they will be able to have access to more high-end types of liquor, distilled spirits, liqueurs, that are not currently available in ABC stores because there's not enough of a demand. But you're going to see what you might call artisanal products become available. And we're not talking about the kind of stuff that an 18-year-old is going to want to get drunk on. This is, you know, $60 a bottle vodka that is, you know, distilled through, you know, through potato rinds in northern Canada.
That the state's not going to buy and put in their stores because it's such a niche, long tail, demand. But private retailers can.
This is one reason why 20% of Virginia liquor purchases are made out of state. That's another reason that we'll be able to increase our the money made on this is because people who now cross over into Washington or West Virginia or Maryland to buy their liquor won't have to do that anymore because they'll be able to get the products they desire closer to home.
We're talking with political blogger and online journalist Rick Sincere. He's online at ricksincere.com. Margo, thanks, darling. Have a great evening.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to Frank. He's on line one, and we got a line open for you at 977-1070 here at 9 minutes before 5 o'clock. Frank is in Charlottesville. Frank, go right ahead.
Thank you. I don't know the names. I'm sorry, but you bring us up, me especially, up to date on the gentleman in South Carolina, I believe, that won the Democratic primary that no one had ever heard of, and it was just a shock to everyone, and no one can figure out how that happened. I hope you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're talking about Alvin Green, who won the Democratic primary in South Carolina against a better, more experienced opponent, not necessarily better known. I think I wrote about this on my blog or somewhere when it happened. And one of the things I pointed out is in every election, you've got some eccentric candidate who gets his name on the ballot, and usually he gets about 5% of the vote. And every once in a while, one of these guys slips through and actually gets elected to something. And that's what I think is the case with Alvin Green. There were some people in the Democratic Party in South Carolina who thought he was some kind of Republican plant, but it was basically a case of people going into a low turnout election, not knowing either of the candidates, and voting for the name that seemed most familiar. And in his case is Al Green, which is a very popular name in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Thank you so much for your answer.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate you joining the conversation. We got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking live in studio with Rick Sincere. He's online at ricksincere.com. What did you think of the 5th District Forum? I've been playing a lot of audio from that recently because I want people to hear that. It was Congressman Perriello, who, by the way, I just confirmed will be live in studio on Thursday on this program, an independent candidate, Jeff Clark, who's affiliated with the Tea Party in Danville, but says he also supports the Republican Party as well.
I enjoyed the forum. I thought it went really well. I was disappointed that Senator Hurt did not participate. And as a matter of fact, the morning of the forum, I posted something on Facebook critical of Senator Hurt for his decision not to participate. And within 5 minutes, I got a call from his campaign manager.
Oh, really?
trying to explain the campaign's position. And I argued with him I think we came to an agreement to disagree.
Yeah. Can I ask you this just about that point? Because just a couple of days before that happened, I had Bob Holsworth on the line. He's on every Monday. And I asked him, I said, Bob, are we still doing this? I mean, in American politics, are we still having candidates, mainstream, well-known candidates, who are not going to debates and forums because there's somebody there that they don't want to be there or something, and it's their way of making some statement instead of making themselves accessible to the voters? And Holsworth said, regrettably so. I mean, yes, we are, but we shouldn't be. I mean, the American voters have matured to the point now where it's like, okay, get over it. We'd rather have you at the event.
Yeah, and I think it would have been a much more lively exchange. And I think the whole point is moot now because the Perriello and Hurt campaigns have come to an agreement on a series of 4 televised debates. So more voters will be able to see it. But I thought it was very informative. I thought it was quite civil. I had not met or heard Jeffrey Clark before, and it turns out he and I agreed on a lot of issues.
Yeah, he did a good job.
And I was able to get a lot of material out of that. My blog was linked to by the New York Times. because I reported on the debate, and a video I put on YouTube was also linked by the New York Times.
Great.
An article I wrote based on an interview I did with Congressman Perriello, in which he asserted that he voted for a healthcare reform on libertarian basis, went viral. I got hundreds and hundreds of hits on that, and I was able to get a response from the local libertarians who said, I don't know why he thinks he's a libertarian, because we don't think he is.
Let's go to Chris. He's in Charlottesville. Chris, you're on with Rick Sincere. Go right ahead.
Hi, Corey. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm a Tea Party person here in Charlottesville, and I was looking at Mr. Clark and looking at Mr. Hurt, and he didn't come to some of the functions while the primary stuff hadn't even been resolved, and even after the primary, and I ended up figuring out that he's not coming to some of these events because he's trying to galvanize the people that were supporting the Tea Party candidates. He wants to not entangle himself with Clark whatsoever, and I thought at first that was not necessarily genuine, but I think that he's riding a wave into Congress, and he doesn't want that wave to be disturbed by any unfortunate debris in the water, which is basically what I consider Mr. Clark. I think he's just unfortunate debris in the water.
I mean, it's a great point, and Chris has a good point. Mm-hmm. If and this is a number one lesson in campaign politics, if you're ahead in the polls, shut up, you know, and
right.
Don't do anything.
I certainly understand the Hurt campaign's rationale for doing what they're doing. I don't agree with it, and I don't particularly like it. But I think that what we would have seen if Senator Hurt had been part of that senior statesman's forum would be a number of occasions in which Jeff Clark would have said, I agree with Senator Hurt. I agree with Senator Hurt. I agree with Senator Hurt.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It would have benefited Senator Hurt
well,
to be in that.
Well, 2/3 of the response time would have been the conservative message, which would have benefited Robert Hurt. That's how I look at it.
And not only that, but C-SPAN was there and NPR and a lot of other
all of which would
outlets.
Have benefited Robert Hurt. Yeah.
I think so. I think that in the long run, this may not have an effect on what happens on November 2nd. But I just feel that politics should be more open and that you should have an opportunity to engage your opponent. One of the things I said to Hurt's campaign manager was, if he can't deal with Jeffrey Clark, how's he going to deal with Nancy Pelosi?
Rick Sincere, he's online at ricksincere.com. Rick, thank you so much. Enjoyed it.
I loved it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.